The Story of Jesus, Lecture 7, Jesus as a Youngster and a Young Man in His Community. We are all thinking about Jesus as a youngster and as a young man in his community. We know the story of the birth of Jesus, and we call that cool. But what sort of education did Jesus have? What sort of understanding did he have? Well, many books and many stories tell many different things. We have this article from Newsweek, which we should be reading one of these moments. A very comprehensive attitude about it. And from the Lamza translation of Gospel Light here, let's see what he says about the education of Jesus. Very interesting. The education of Jesus. Now about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. And the Jews marveled, saying, "How knoweth this man letters, having never learned?" Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. "How knowest this man letters, having never learned?" From John 7:15. Public schools and colleges were unknown in the East until the coming of Christian missionaries. Wow, it's a long time later, isn't it? Education consisted almost exclusively of the study of the sacred literature. In the church, mosque, and synagogues, men and boys sit around the book and read in turn. A few of exceptional merit are trained more fully by the priests and rabbis. Some of them acquire an education by constant attendance at the religious services, where they commit to memory portions of the scripture and the liturgy. Some men know the writings by heart, but cannot read them. There are some bishops and priests, even today, who are able to read, but who cannot write. In fact, in the Orient, writing is an art all by itself, and the labor of it is done by professional scribes who are recruited from the ranks of the poor. Reading and writing are unpopular among the rich. The missionaries in the early days had difficulty in gaining the consent of rich parents to send their boys to school. This is largely because until recent times, education was of no value for business and other purposes. Banks and commercial houses were unknown. No doubt Jesus had acquired an oral education, just as Easterners do today. But he also knew how to read. This does not necessarily imply that he was educated for the priesthood. He read Aramaic, his native tongue, and also Hebrew. This explains the surprise of the Jews, who could not understand how one with a limited educational equipment had such a grasp of the scriptures. Jesus had an inner understanding of the sacred literature because he had studied it from a spiritual point of view. He did not take things literally. Not having been educated under the strict care of the rabbis and priests, his mind was free from the tradition of his elders. We wonder how he was able to be so intuitive, how he was able to be so persuasive, how he was able to be so aware of knowledge and of wisdom and of the things that happened in those days, because it seemed so foreign. So foreign to what every other child did. And everything was learned as an apprentice, just like Europe today. Europe has everything today learned as an apprentice. You go to school, and if you do not do well in school, you are not allowed to go on to upper school. And this is the biggest joke that ever came along the pike. Education should be for those who want to be educated, those who are thrilled about being educated. A lot of people are not thrilled about being educated and could be. Now you take Einstein, he wasn't thrilled about being educated, yet he had one of the greatest minds that we have known in a lifetime. And you take many other scientists, Edison himself, another great inventor and creator of the light bulb, many other things. He had no interest in education. But he was perhaps one of the most educated men that ever existed. What is it that makes a person take to education and benefit from education? Certainly, and we look at Bill Gates, he didn't finish his college. He took his inner wisdom and wrote his software and became the richest man in the world. Interesting, isn't it? Really interesting. How does this work? How does this function? Jesus, from what we read here, did not go to school. He did not go to school to learn from the rabbis and the priests of the temple. He went there and taught them. I'm sure they were very pleased about that. But he went there and taught them from an intuitive awareness. He didn't teach them from a braggadocio of knowing everything, of being superior to the priests and to the rabbis. He taught them by being intuitively aware of what it was that was being talked about. As I counsel with all of you, I intuitively am aware of your life, your time, your experience. And I say things to you that meet with your life, your time, your experience, not because I want to be superior to you, but because that's how I work. I could intellectually go into all of your lives and tell you everything that your life is about and what you're doing and where you're making your mistakes and where you can improve on them, but that wouldn't help you. Because it doesn't make any difference what you're doing wrong. It only makes a difference what your attitude is about what you want to do right. What attitude do you want to have that is going to benefit you to accomplish what you want to do, if you might say, right? Now, if you're just going to know a lot of information and not apply it, what benefit is there in that for you? If you're going to know a lot of intuitive stuff and not apply it, what benefit is there in that? The spiritualist group listens to mystics and listens to the inner awareness, and the Catholics have their mystics that listen to their inner awareness. All religions have their teachers, gurus, priests, whatever, listening to the inner awareness. And the great the great king of, I believe it was somewhere, Persia, I think, who went to the guru on the mountaintop, to the hermit, remember? And he said, "Oh hermit, what shall I do? My country is running to pot. All the things are going bad. The wars are not being successful. What shall I do? What shall I do? What shall I do?" And the great guru looked at him after keeping him waiting for several weeks, and he said, "This too shall pass." Now, do you think the king appreciated that? Do you think the king appreciated? Now, the king knew that. He knew this too shall pass, but he didn't want to face that. He wanted to do something about it now. He wanted to shape the destiny of himself and the world now, and he wanted to do it now. But he wasn't willing to do what had to be done. What had to be done by the king for him to have a more harmonious government, a more harmonious nation, a more prosperous government, a more prosperous nation? What did he have to do? Lydia? He had to see his government prosperous and harmonious, right? That's all he had to do. He just had to see them in his mind doing that and expect them to do that. And what would happen? They would be prosperous and harmonious. If you have trouble with your wife, your husband, your children, your relatives, your world, your employer, your employees, your associates, whatever, whoever may be in your world, you start seeing order, balance, and harmony, and so it is. Now, may I jump back to the story of Jesus? What did Jesus teach his followers? Balance, harmony, joy, peace. He taught them these basic fundamental things, and did they like it? Did they practice it? No. Did they believe that was what worked? No. They wanted a miracle. They wanted somebody to raise the dead. You know, they liked raising the dead. They thought that was real cool, you know. And of course, the dead person probably thought it was cool too, but he didn't care, did he? He didn't care because he was only sleeping. It didn't matter to him. It really didn't. And hey, if you're sleeping, can you wake up in another dimension too? Mm-hmm. Why not? Now, you see, and how many dimensions do you have a choice of waking up in? Mm-hmm. Now, each one of us, we go to bed at night, I think, and we fall asleep, I think, and we dream, I think. And each one of our dreams is a life in another dimension. If we want to zap into it fully, we would not know that we were leaving our body behind on another dimension, and we were off in another dimension. The world would say, oh, they died, but we're off in another dimension. We could take our body with us too, shake up the world and say, what happened? Where'd you go? But they like to have a body to bury, you know. People like to look at the dead because they say, well, they're gone now, I can go marry somebody else. Do whatever. But you see, they like to make sure that that adventure is closed in their life. Now, think about it. What did Jesus do? He said, it's done unto you according to your belief. It's so simple, that sent a statement again and again and again, he said. And he said, now, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. He said, if a man steal your coat, give him your cloak. He said, agree with your adversary quickly. He said these stupid statements, these give up statements, you know, where you're giving over the control to somebody else. Are you? My goodness, you are totally in control and the other person is out of control. The minute you say to a person, hey, you're right. You're right, I do have gapsosis. I do have underarm odor. You're right, my slip is too long or my shirt is cut or whatever. You're right. What can I do about it? And the person would say to you, well, yeah, your shirt's ripped there. You know, you can't wear a ripped shirt. You're right, but what can I do? Well, I'll give you one of mine. And is that your adversary? That's somebody who really works with you. The moment you agree with someone who says something sort of nonsensical, which isn't important to you, they become your friend. They become your friend. And there's no fight. There's no argument. There's only agreement. That's what diplomacy is supposed to be all about. But unfortunately, diplomacy is spelled by another term. It's called one-upmanship. Each one wants to be better than the others. I had my appendix out. Oh, I did too, but I also had my gallbladder out, and I've had, you know, they always try to one-upman the onion. They try to do one better. And they say, well, I thought we perhaps should mow the lawn before the friends come because we want it to look nice. I thought so too. Well, why didn't you do it? You know? Everybody wants to get on the bandwagon of whatever the popular thinking is. Well, don't do that. If somebody says, I thought we should have mowed the grass. Yeah, it would look nice mowed. That's true. I thought so too. You see, right away you make an irritation You make someone irritated at you because you come up with a statement saying you thought so too, which you may well have thought. You may well have thought and done nothing about it, like you do usually do. People who say, I thought so too, usually are not those who do something about it. You know? Now, Ingeborg was telling us that the light was out at the Shangri-La. And I knew that it was out. It was out for months. And I said, Ingeborg, put the bulb in. She said, I can't reach it. I said, well, tell Brian to put it in. So Ingeborg tells Brian to put the bulb in, right? Ingeborg told Brian to put the bulb in. Ingeborg told Brian to put the bulb in. I don't think she did. I think somebody else told Brian to put the bulb in because he put the bulb in the wrong place. He put the bulb in the front of the house instead of the back of the house so that it would light the driveway behind the house, not in front. In front of the house, the moonlight lightens the place there. You don't really need it. In the back is where you need it. And so the bulb is now in the front of the house, which is no big deal. Who goes over there anyhow, you know? In the middle of the night, you're precious. Well, hey, Dodie, we'll put a light in the back too, okay? It's just a matter of screwing it in. And it just is a little awkward for Ingeborg because it's a little higher than a stool or a chair. She'd have to use a ladder or something to go up there, right? But it can be done. Now, yes, Ingeborg was given that house when we bought it and told, Ingeborg, this is your project. In the next 10 years, I want you to make this house look nice. And everybody says, oh, what kind of budget does she have? It's not a matter of budget, right? It's a matter of making it look nice. And so she tore out the carpet. She cleaned it up as much as she could. And there's a lot more to be done. But she did a lot of things there, and all by herself. And she tore the carpet out and drug the carpet out to the trash can out and back and lifted it up into it and dumped it in. Remember doing that? Yeah. Oh, toughy there. And you see, this is what we do. Now, what would Jesus have done? He would have had some of his friends come and give him a hand. He would say, hey, you guys doing nothing? Come on over and let's play a game. I've been given this house to make it beautiful in 10 years. Come give me a hand. Oh, hey, that would be neat. Let's tear out the windows. Let's do this. No, step by step. You don't tear out the windows till you're ready to put in new ones, because otherwise you got a gaping hole there. And the snow would come in, and the wind and the rain, and the foxes and the deer and the antelope play there. And we wouldn't want that to happen. But you see, Jesus, he had a thought that he wanted to carry out a message. And so he developed a group of people around him that he called disciples. And that was neat. So Ingeborg is going to develop around herself a cadre of friends who she's going to call disciples, perhaps, or just friends or whatever. And miracles will happen. Now, what has that got to do with Jesus as a young man? Well, you see, we always think that Jesus learned from the rabbis, that he learned from the attending the services of the temple, and he learned from the priests, and he learned from his father who was a carpenter and stuff. He didn't. You think that the Buddha, you think that the Buddha, the 27th Buddha, you think he went to school? Where'd he go to school? Did he know the Bhagavad Gita complete? Did he know the Upanishads? Did he know all of the things that were his philosophy background? He knew it because I know that I know that I know. The divine in me knows everything. He didn't study it. And you know, if I say to you, the Mohammedans teach this, the Christians teach this, the Buddhists teach this, you will agree with me. And I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Because you don't know. and you don't care. And you see, the rest of the world doesn't know, and the rest of the world doesn't care. So Jesus tuned in to his divine inner self, and whatever came out, he says, that's cool with me. And that's what he taught. And what kind of a being was or is Jesus? The kind of being is a real cool boy, a real with it person, a person who is tuned into the harmony, peace, joy, and right action of the world. He had no thought in his mind contrary to the highest good of everybody else in the world about him. It had to be his nature. It had to be. You see, a great difficulty that we have, and that great difficulty is that when we read what other people write about the Buddha, what other people write about Jesus, and then we think that that's what Jesus really did and said. Ingeborg goes out to the Shangri-La, and she's picking up sticks along the way and throwing them in the trash in her trailer. And she goes to the Shangri-La, and she sits in the back room of the Shangri-La as the nursery there, and she's there for maybe about an hour, and then she comes out. We say, Ingeborg went to the Shangri-La, and she sat in the nursery of the Shangri-La for an hour, and then she came out. Somebody else says, oh, she was meditating. She was meditating and having an experience with her inner self, with her divine self. And somebody else says, oh, no, actually she's writing a book secretly. She's got a computer back there, and she's writing a chapter to her book. Every day she goes back there for an hour, and she writes a chapter on a book. And what a book that's going to be. Wow. And so then somebody else says, oh, no, no. She goes back there, and she takes her cat, Blackie, and puts it in her lap, and she feeds it by hand little tidbits and says, Blackie, I love you. Blackie, you're fantastic. Blackie, you're gorgeous. Blackie, you're so wonderful. And Blackie just sort of wiggles and sniggles all over, and everybody who comes around thinks Blackie is the most wonderful cat, naturally. Well, naturally, because that's what Ingeborg's been teaching the cat. And somebody else comes along and says, oh, no, no. Ingeborg went into the nursery to take a secret nap because she likes to take a nap. So she's in there sleeping. Then someone else says, oh, no, no. She's in there. You think she's napping, but she's communing. She's communing with her mother and father who had passed on. And she wanted to find out how they're doing and listen to their lives. Oh, no, no. Do you realize that Ingeborg has just written a book? And she is back there with the copies of the book that she is autographing and sending out to all the people who have bought it. Oh, my goodness sakes. What was Ingeborg doing? And can you see how every single thing I said has a little touch of logic, a little touch of possibility in it, maybe even a big touch, and all of them are incorrect, except perhaps the one about Blackie. But all of them are incorrect. Now, you and I are ready to believe all those things because it comes from a reliable source. Ellen said this, Dodie says this, Edith says this, Lydia says this, Sylvia says this, you know, and Gertrude just thinks Ingeborg is so wonderful, and Gertrude just says all the nicest things about Ingeborg. You can't believe anything Gertrude said, because she'll only say nice things about anything, you know. And Ellen sits there and she says, I haven't the biggest idea what's going on. Now, could any one of those five possibilities be true? Yes, very much so. And is any one of them true? Is any one of them true? And no, none of them is true. She does not go there for an hour every single day to do whatever we say she does. But you see, that's how the story of Jesus was written. It was written by observers who had perhaps never even gone into the nursery to see what Ingeborg was doing, and then they feel they can write the story of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And then their nature is an evil nature, for instance. We want to kill all those people who don't believe as we believe. We want to kill those people who don't believe as we believe. The people who don't believe as we do, they don't deserve to live. And then another person who's writing the story of Jesus, he said, well, now, the doctor said that they were only sleeping. They really were not dead. So Jesus never raised anybody from the dead. He never did anything like that. You know? And there's a logic in that too, you know. And then Jesus' mother was always standing by him, taking care of him, making sure that he was a good boy, and educating him. And Jesus' mother taught Jesus how to read, write, and do arithmetic. Jesus' mother didn't know anything about it. You know what I mean? She had no idea about reading, writing, and arithmetic. Of all the people on earth, the last person to teach Jesus to read, write, and do that is a woman. Because a woman is not educated. You know, a woman might help the children learn and become far superior to the child in the process, but she is not supposed to have knowledge. She is not supposed to have learning. And like we read from the Lamza edition here, the rich children, their parents did not allow them to go and be educated because they didn't have any need for it. There's no use for it. So what was the childhood of Jesus like? What was it like? And I told you yesterday what it was like. The childhood of Jesus was a loner going off doing his own thing. He did not associate with the other children. He did not associate with the other people. He communed with nature, if you like. He was just one as all. Now, it's not that he didn't like the other children. It's not that he wouldn't play a game with them now and then. He even did what his mother asked him to do. Make the water into wine, remember? And so, and that's not impossible. We think that's kind of different, but it's not impossible. Do you know, there are, I cannot tell you the number, it's an unlimited number. There are an unlimited number of things that are changing water into wine. Did you know that? Well, Herb, what are those things? They're called grapes. The grapes take the moisture from the air, from the ground. They take it into themselves. They take it into their fruit and their pulp. And then their fruit and their pulp is in turn put into a vat and let percolate. And it becomes alcohol. It becomes wine. And then they serve it as wine. Now, this lowly grape, this good-for-nothing grape that is just hanging there on, it is a manufacturing plant making wine. It's a stage of the wine, but it's making wine. Now, how can that be? You see, we have so many miracles taking place all around us all the time. We have so many magical things happening in our life that we're not even taking credit for being aware of it. But it's wonderful. Now, we ask the question, Jesus as a youngster, okay? Jesus as a youngster, I believe, was out doing his thing, because was Jesus an ordinary kid? Hardly. Do you think that he was limited by anything his mother asked him to do? No. Or by his father asked him to do? No. Ellen, go and make me a cup of coffee. So Ellen gets up, goes to the kitchen, turns on the hot water, turns on the water to make it hot, and puts coffee in the cup, instant coffee. And then when the water is hot, then she pours the hot water into the coffee cup and stirs it. And she brings it into me and says, here you are, Herb, here's your cup of coffee. 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Jesus' mother says, Jesus, I'm knitting. I'm weaving here. Would you go get me a cup of coffee? Jesus says, sure, Mom. He goes to the kitchen, gets the cup, puts the water in, puts the coffee in, gives it to his mom, and it's hot. it's already perfect. It doesn't take more than just a matter of doing it. Now, Jesus could have said, Mom, it's sitting right next to you. I knew that you wanted it. And she'd say, oh, thank you, dear. You're always so thoughtful. And then she'd say, oh, Jesus, she didn't have glasses in those days, but Jesus, would you bring me my glasses? And he said, Mom, they're right next to you. And they weren't next to her a second before, you know, because there's nothing to limit him. But he didn't try to let people know that he was doing this because he didn't want to put on a show. But he did it. He did. You see, and we have that capacity within us. Now, do you think that a person like that needs to go to school to learn? Hardly. Hardly at all. And do you think that if he disappeared, his mother would care? He said, his mother said, Jesus, bring in some wood for the fire. I'm going to bake some bread this afternoon and make supper. Well, Jesus goes, click, the wood is there, and his mother's not paying any attention, and Jesus is gone. And he's off onto the mountains, and he's off onto the hillsides having a good time, enjoying being one with his divine self. Now, step two in this saga of magic. Jesus' mother had a thought, and she thinks, oh, Jesus, would you mind going over to Aunt Betty's house and borrowing some tea? I would like some tea. So he hears this because he is all knowledge. He is all inclusive. And so he doesn't go to his Aunt Betty's house to pick up the tea. He just manifests the tea on the kitchen counter, if I may use that term, at their home, on the kitchen table, you could say. And when his mother comes out to take a pause from her weaving, she finds the tea there, and she says to herself silently, oh, I can always depend on Jesus. No matter what I ask him to do, he does it so quickly and so quietly, I hardly know that he has done it, you know. Now, you say, Herb, you know that's not true. I know that's true. I know that's true because Jesus was everywhere at all times doing all things in all ways, and so are you. But he knew it. Do you understand? He knew it, he applied it, and he practiced it. Did you ever hear your mother calling when you weren't at home, Sylvia?
Yes.
Did you ever hear your mother asking you to do something when you weren't at home and you followed through on it and you brought it home and your mother says, I was going to ask you to do that, you know? Why? Because you were one. You see, when you're one with someone, you're in tune with them, you're aware of them, and you don't have to be there to know it. Now, were you surprised at yourself for being aware?
No.
It was just normal. It was just normal. You see, here she is, the Christ child, and nobody called her the Christ child, and so she didn't know she was. And now I'm calling her the Christ child, and what does she say? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. But you see, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Now, Dorothea, she was reading the newspaper article about us one time, and in the article it told that we said that all is God and I am God and things like that. And Dorothea says, Eureka, I found my gang again. I lost them and now I found them again. And so she came out here and she says, I'm right. That's the people who believe just like I do. Now, why did she wait so long to find us? Because she was having fun with the miracles and the adventures that she was having. And as soon as she got tired of the adventures she was having, and she wanted to get back on course again, recognizing her divinity, then she connected with us. Gertrude fought with us for years on each little step of the way. And finally, she accepted each little step of the way, and then she says, oh, this is fun. Gertrude says, oh, I would love to take the public transportation. I love to take the buses, and I love to take the trolleys, and I love to do that. I don't want to drive. And then
she got the car. Her daughter left the car there, and she took lessons in driving. And after she learned how to drive, she said, "My goodness sakes, why was I so reluctant? This is fun." And she gets in her car, and she scoots around. And, you know, one of these days, she's going to have a smart car. Because she likes to be able to park forward, backward, sideward, anywhere she likes to park, you know. And then, you know, Gertrude, a new car is yet to come out. And the new car is this, in your pocket. Squish, 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 and put it in your pocket. And then you bring it out, whoosh, and then there's your car. Whatever size you like. If you want the limousine or a truck, or if you want a van, or if you want a little car, you can have any. Hey, that's not silly. That's not silly. It's just that we haven't been motivated to bring it forth just yet. And it'll come. It'll come.
Just tell it to
Edith. Just tell it. Well, now, why is Sylvia making such a garish remark? Tell it to Edith. Because she knows that Edith has not been injured by life, which would tell most of us you can't do it. Because when Edith hears anybody say you can't do it, she says, then there's a way to do it. There is a way to do it. And what does she do? Edith is a crazy woman. She has Aladdin's magic lamp. Did you know that?
Yes.
Well, aren't you smart? She has Aladdin's magic lamp. What's it called? It's called a computer. And she gets on Aladdin's magic lamp and finds out anything she wants under the sun. She finds out how to do it, how it was done, how many there are of it. She finds out everything from Aladdin's magic lamp. And really, it should be called Edith's magic lantern, you know. And she gets on there. She doesn't even polish it. She just presses a button, and it comes to life. She puts it to sleep at night. Good night, baby. Good night, sleep tight. And fill yourself up with a lot of new ideas, because tomorrow morning I'm going to have a lot of wonderful adventures for us to go on. And her computer is her adventure land. Her computer is her fun land. And unlimited. Now, again, Gertrude was not connected to the internet, but in a slight way. And then one day, the internet in Switzerland decided to be big. And internet, and Gertrude was right there when it happened. And she went click. And her internet company was fast and is complete. And she is everywhere doing everything at all times. And then 4 o'clock in the morning, she gets off the computer and takes an hour's sleep. And then she gets the children ready for school, her grandchildren. And as soon as she got them off to school, she's back on her magic lantern again. But no, it can be a wonderful thing. And really, stop and think about it. Stop and think about it. All the knowledge that's available anywhere in the world is on there. You just have to know how to find it. You just have to know how to find it. You just have to know how to find it. You just have to know how to find it. You just have to know how to find it. You go within yourself and you know how to find it. All the knowledge, you don't even need the computer. You don't even need the car to travel. You just say, I'm in Switzerland. I'm in Ebmattingen right now. I'm learning to pronounce that correctly. And I'm in Zurich right now. You know, and I'm visiting my friends right now. And, oh, I made a mistake. I went to Zurich in winter, and I wanted to go to Zurich in summer so I could go swimming in the sea. Okay, click, it's summer. Oh. Hey, that's true. Now, Dodi, can you click on your computer and click summertime somewhere? Yeah. Can you click summertime in Australia? Or what is it? It's summer now in Australia, down under, isn't it? It's summer in New Zealand. So it's summer there. So click there. And then it's starting to get cold in New Zealand. So you click yourself somewhere else in Florida. or Ghana or Guyana or wherever you say, and click, click. But now, we can do that with our mind too. And this is the type of education. This is the type of education that Jesus had. Believe it. It is true. Mm-hmm. It's the kind of education that he, as a young man, unlimited by anybody saying he had to learn this or that or the other. And it says here, when he went before the priests, this is what they said to him in from John here. Now, about the midst of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. He's a kid going up in the middle of the temple and teaching. And Jesus and the Jews marveled, saying, He knoweth this man letters. He knoweth this man letters.
How
knoweth this man letters, having never learned? Thank you. It makes a big difference from he to how, doesn't it? How knoweth this man letters, having never learned? Having never learned. Now, they're right there, and he's right there, and that's current stuff. Maybe a couple of years that he is in age, and by 10 to 15 or whatever, you know. But how knoweth this man letters? And when was a man considered a man in the time of Jesus? When was he considered mature? 13,
38.
12 and 13. 12 and 13. Right. When was a girl considered mature? 12. 11, 12. Childbearing. How old was Mary when she had Jesus? I think she was 13. Now, that's pretty young by our terminology. But of course, living to the age of 30 and dying, then that's pretty young too by our terms. So they got going earlier in life and took responsibility earlier. And so if you might say the youth of Jesus was from the age of maybe 1 or 2 years until he was like 8 or 10. And then from 10 to 13, then he was a young man. And at 13, he was a mature man. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, and then we're talking about child labor and we're talking about these other things. It's so silly. It's so silly. And I find the most silly thing about child labor is that parents in their home or in their business can use the help of their children, and it's not called child labor.
Yeah.
And it is just as much the labor of a child as it is anywhere else, you know? And we have such interesting attitudes about words and about responsibilities and about terms and stuff like that. We are fantastic, aren't we? We do great things. We are great creators. Now, as a young man, let's step into Jesus' activity as a young man. Now, what was he doing as a young man? Did he go to dances? Did he go to the jazz festivals? Did he go to these various programs where they have music and stuff like that? They had music, you know. They had their music. And what?
Why not?
And they had the kid-type music, you know, because the kids like music too, I'm sure. I mean, I know they do now in Arabic countries. And look at Japan, my gosh. The kids in Japan are just crazy about this stuff. And they have it on their cell telephones, you know. Their cell telephone has the email on it, that has the radio on it, it has the FM, AM, it has television on it. You know, my goodness, they got a whole world here that people had not even known 20 years ago existed hardly, you know. It is an amazing thing. Okay. What did Jesus do as a young man? I think he again was out in the desert. And I don't mean desert. He was out in his countryside. And his countryside was his countryside. Here, we look at the high desert that we're in, and we say, yeah, a lot of green stuff here, and a lot of not green stuff, and a lot of rocks, and beautiful, and this and that. And hey, Wherever you live, you call it beautiful. Do you think that the children living in the Himalayas do not call their country beautiful? Do you think that the Hunza children living on top of some of the coldest mountains in the world in the Himalayas, that they are not happy kids playing outside in the snow, doing all the things that they, barefoot even, barefoot, because they don't think about being cold. It's utterly amazing. It's utterly amazing. But you see, when whatever environment, and the kids in the African desert, it's hot. They have no clothes at all. I mean, what are they covering? They're not concerned about covering themselves up. There's nothing to cover. They don't think of themselves as being unusual, no more than an animal, you know. And they go around, and there were artist pictures of some of these young men herding sheep. And they were standing with one foot on their knee, you know, and the other foot on the ground. I guess they just wanted to have one hot foot at a time. But perhaps that's what it was, perhaps that wasn't. But that's what they did. And what were these young kids? They were the fastest runners that are anywhere in the world. Because they run with the gazelles, they run with the sheep, they run with their flocks. And are their feet crumply and bad because of the heat and because of the sand and snow? No. Their feet are just as beautiful as if they were wearing shoes, except they have a little more leathery aspect to them. And they don't know it. And these men who are in their age, they're very old. They're at least 60, maybe 55 or 60 years old. They're ancient people in the desert. And they're shriveled up. Their bodies are all looking like prunes, you know. And yet their feet are just like always, with that leather covering on them that they walk in the hot sun. So, you see, the acclimation of the body to the environment is wonderful. Now, I want to take just another moment here with our desert people. I have met many desert people who lived in the desert. And they actually lived in the desert, like the bush people. They lived in the desert with little or no clothing, no shoes, no nothing. And their skin was like a baby's bottom. Their skin was gentle, not, you know, bad from the sun and so forth, because they did not call the sun bad. They did not call the activity of the heat on their skin bad. And they did not worry about where the moisture was coming from for their skin. They just knew their skin was always beautiful. And as they did this, they built up a program for themselves. And the program for themselves was that over the years, this was their belief and this was their experience. I say to you, over the years now, and you've got lots of years ahead of you, if you will program yourself that you live in your temple of the living spirit, if you will program yourself that you are all knowledge, if that pleases you, if you will program yourself, you have all power to accomplish anything you want to do. If you will program yourself that, you'll have it. Gertrude took a week or two to learn how to drive a car. And while she was learning how, she says, I'm learning how. And once she learned how, she was done. She's always learning, of course, but she drives her car with great charm and great ability and great facility. And it's a joy to her. And so it is with us. When we teach ourselves to live in our pure, beautiful bodies, just like Jesus taught himself to live in his pure, beautiful body. And as he taught himself to live in his pure, beautiful body, did he need food? Did he need water? Did he need anything? Not at all.
That's what his youth was spent on. His youth was spent on living in his immortal, eternal, perfect body. And with that in mind, always, he never grew old. At the age of 30, he looked like he was 16, you know. That's beautiful. You say, well, that's not a big difference. For them it is. For them it is. It's really quite exciting when you consider how these things work out and how our life goes along and what we do, because we are very special people. And when you consider, too, that Jesus as a youngster and a young man in his community, he wasn't in his community. He was in his personal community of his own introspective self. Interesting, isn't it? Think on these things. They're quite exciting, and they're quite revealing, and they're a lot of fun. I love you. I love you. I love you.